So what is this cheer about? So what I wanted to talk about is, as we're getting near the season of Hanukkah, right? Hanukkah's coming. We're moving into being prepared for Hanukkah. I wanted to talk about what is Hanukkah really about, okay? In this sheet, I called it My Hanukkah, which is, right? Everybody recognize that phrase? Right? That's the sugya. Go ahead, Jessica. It's from the Gemara with the sugya that says, what is Hanukkah? What happened on Hanukkah? What's the miracle of Hanukkah? Right? What is Hanukkah about? So I want to talk about two levels. One is really just what happened, right? What is the historical events of the Hanukkah story? Because even though you're all going to tell me, oh, I know the historical events of the Hanukkah story, and some of you might know them better than others of you, my favorite moment one year at MMY Chagiga was the girls like put on a play of the Hanukkah story, and they like clearly had like no idea what happened. It was like, and then Antiochus wanted to enslave all the Jews. It's like, no, that was Pesach maybe, like enslaving Jews. There was no enslaving of Jews in the Hanukkah story. But what did it demonstrate to me? Some of us had good Jewish history classes in high school and really learned the story well. And some of us kind of know the story from our kindergarten play or our first grade play or our little video that we watched on the internet. But, like, do we really know the story? Okay, so I want to take a look at that. And obviously, out of that, I want to try to understand what's the message of Hanukkah, right? Meaning we're going into this chag. Every chag carries with it a certain spiritual message, a certain idea for us as to how we're supposed to experience this chag, what are we supposed to bring into the chag, how are we supposed to celebrate the chag, what are we supposed to take out of the chag. So what is really the message of Hanukkah? Okay, so let's start with question number one, and then we'll move from number one into number two. Okay, so I started by giving you a timeline just to really give you the historical context. Okay, so it starts with Alexander the Great. Okay? By the way, when did the Hanukkah story take place? During what time period in Jewish history? This you know. I know you know it. What? Good. Second Beis Hamikdash, right? Bayit Sheni. Okay? So, but how long did Bayit Sheni last? No. Bayit Rishon lasted 70 years. How long did Bayit Sheni last? The truth is, I don't know. So, maybe somebody can save me. 400 years? I was just going to say 400 something. Hundreds of years. Okay? Bayit Sheni lasted hundreds of years. So the first question is, what part of Bayit Sheni? What was happening in Bayit Sheni when the Hanukkah story took place? Where are we in Jewish history? Okay, so the first thing that is on this list is, at a certain point during Bayit Sheni, Alexander the Great conquers the area of the world in which Eretz Yisrael is, right? He conquers Syria, Egypt, and, right, this says Judea, right, which is, right, basically Eretz Yisrael. Okay? By the way, how do Chazal view Alexander the Great? Positively or negatively? Positively, right? There's that story of Shimon HaTzadik going out to greet Alexander, right? I'm sure some of you have seen it. The Gemara talks about a positive meeting between Shimon HaTzadik and Alexander. Okay? And Alexander the Great is actually considered a positive figure in Jewish history. But why am I belaboring the point of Alexander the Great? Because what did Alexander the Great bring with him into Eretz Yisrael? Culture. Greek culture. How did the Jews of Eretz Yisrael respond to the Greek culture? They liked it. Gladly, positively. During the time of Alexander and beyond him, how did Chazal relate to Greek culture overall? Okay, it's complex, right? They had, it actually is complex. They had critiques of certain aspects of Chachma Yevanis, Greek wisdom, but overall, there was an acceptance of the idea of bringing in knowledge and culture. That was not objected to, okay? That was not when the Greeks were the bad guys, okay? When did Greek culture become, right, it's the Yevanim, they're the bad guys, we have to fight them? That was not during the time of Alexander. That only began, if you look at the next thing, right, 198 BCE, which is like, you know, I don't know, somebody do the math, 100 plus minus years after, okay? This guy named Antiochus, not our Antiochus, but a different Antiochus, Antiochus number 3, right, basically came into Eretz Yisrael, And he took over from the descendants about after Alexander died, his kingdom was divided. The people who took over from him were ruling. And then this guy, Antiochus, fought against Talmai the Fifth, who was the kind of follower of Antiochus. No, follower of Alexander. Okay? And Antiochus now kind of threw out the Alexander line and he put in his own line. Okay? He was the Syrio-Greek. He was the Greek that we talk about when we talk about the Greeks of the story of Hanukkah, okay? And in 175 BCE, right, we have Antiochus the Fourth. He's our Antiochus, right? The Antiochus of the Hanukkah story. And what does he do during Alexander's reign? What was the attitude of Antiochus towards Jewish culture and Jewish worship and Jewish ritual and mitzvot? What was Alexander's attitude towards other cultures? What? Open, right? You do whatever you want, right? Multiculturalism. He accepted and appreciated all the different cultures under his rule, and he allowed a certain degree of autonomy in the land. So the Jews were allowed to continue their behavior and their worship under Alexander, okay? Once Antiochus comes in, what does he say? Right? Everything we know from the Hanukkah story, right? No, you're not allowed to behave the way you want to behave. He outlaws learning Torah. He outlaws Bris Milah. He outlaws Shabbos and Kashrus, right? He takes over the temple, which is the symbol of Jewish sovereignty and like the heart of Judaism, right? He desecrates the temple. He puts an idol of Zeus in the temple, right? What is he basically saying, Antiochus? Like, why is he doing this? What's his message? What? Yes, I'm in charge, right? I'm in charge. I want you to do things my way, and this is how I'm going to demonstrate it, okay? Fine. What eventually happens during the time of Antiochus? What do the Jews do? They rebel, right? Under who? Who starts the rebellion? Matityahu and his five sons, right? I hope you know them by heart. Do you know them by heart? Okay, so this is in God. I see somebody's head is going, right? Every like little Israeli kid goes, Yonatan, Yochanan, Elazar, Shimon, Yehuda, right? Those are the five sons of Matityahu. They're here on this sheet for you. Okay, so Matityahu and his five sons begin a rebellion against Antiochus, okay? The spiritual leader is Matityahu. The physical leader is Yehuda, right? Yehuda Maccabi, right? Matityahu dies. Yehuda takes over from Matityahu. Okay, there is a number of years of battles between the Jews and the Syrio-Greeks. And what do they end up doing? What do they end up doing? What? Kick them out. Now, why is that significant? Because what happens after they kick them out? What does Yehuda do? What does he establish? What? A new malcha, right? Now, what does that mean he establishes a new malcha? Right? What do the Jews now have in Eretz Yisrael for the first time in hundreds of years? Freedom, not just freedom. Freedom is the right word, but what does that mean, freedom?
Autonomy.
Right? They are ruling themselves, right? Self-government. And how long does this period last? Does it just last for like, you know, 5 years, 10 years, during, you know, the time of the story of Hanukkah and a little bit beyond? How long does the Hashmonai dynasty, right? Or in English it would be called the Hasmonean dynasty last? Just guess, throw out a number. Or you can look on your sheets, because they're probably hundreds of years. I think 200 years. Okay, the Hashmonai dynasty lasts until when? Until essentially the Churban. Okay, that's how long, right? This kingship, this kingdom that was established by Yehuda, right, lasts in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, okay. If you look at the last thing here, 142 BCE, establishment of the second Jewish commonwealth, which means the second time that Jews had autonomy in Eretz Yisrael. What was the first time? Bayit Rishon, right? Because Bayit Sheni, did we have autonomy when we first came back?
No.
Who was in charge of us then? The Persians, right? Exactly. Okay, and then it rolls over to Alexander, and this is the first time since Bayit Rishon that Jews are ruling themselves in Eretz Yisrael. The Seleucids recognize Jewish autonomy. The Seleucids are those Antiochus guys. The Seleucid kings have a formal overlordship, and the Hashmonaim, which the Hashmonaim acknowledge, meaning technically, right, the Seleucids say, okay, like, you know, we're here, we're in the background, but you govern yourself. This inaugurates a period of great geographical expansion, population growth, and religious, cultural, and social development. Okay? So, overall, how do we relate to the time of the Tkufat of the Hashmonai kings? Is it a good time in Jewish history or a bad time in Jewish history? It's a very good time. Now, it happens to be true, which some of you might know, which might be like kind of in the back of your heads, wait, but we don't like the Hashmonai kings. Why? Right? There's a very famous Ramban. What's wrong with the Hashmonai kings? Why is it bad that they made themselves kings? Because Lo Yasor Shevet Mi Yehuda, and they are obviously not from Shevet Yehuda if they are Kohanim. They are from Shevet Levi, right? And they're not allowed to be kings. And yes, that's true, right? That there was a problem. They weren't supposed to do that. But overall, how do Chazal relate to Tkufat Malchut HaChashmonaim? Very positively. Why? Because you have 200 years of Jewish autonomy and peace and success living in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so when we're, first of all, that's the history. But now I can ask you, when we're celebrating Hanukkah, what are we celebrating? Okay, so I think a piece that is very crucial that a lot of us don't remember or don't recognize or never really noticed is we're not just celebrating the Neis Pach HaShemen, and we're not just celebrating the great battle that routed Antiochus and his, you know, evil group, whatever, evil, I want to say minions, but that's not the right word, evil people, whatever, from the Mikdash and from, you know, Eretz Yisrael. We're celebrating the reestablishment of Jewish autonomy in Eretz Yisrael for the first time in hundreds of years and for a period that lasted hundreds of years. Okay? And that's one of the major things that we're celebrating on Hanukkah. Okay? Which is interesting, to me at least, because if I asked you, what's Hanukkah about for you? I once did this with the Shana Bet class, which was a lot smaller, so we got to go around the room. But like, if I say to you, like, what's Hanukkah about for you? What's the message? What's the spiritual message? So tell me, what is it for you? What's it about for you? Just throw out some answers. Unity? Okay, nice. How come unity? Why unity? Okay, so they're gathering together to fight off the invaders.
Yeah, it's one common cause.
Okay, so it's coming together for a common cause. What else? Miracles? Yafeh. What else? Anything else?
Redemption,
good. Okay, these are all beautiful ideas, but what does it mean to you? When you're celebrating Hanukkah, when you're lighting your candles, what are you thinking about? Yeah.
Spirituality,
good. That's going to be, obviously, that's going to be the next point that I want to get to. What's the spiritual message of Hanukkah? Okay, but again, what I want to point out to you, and this is important for you to recognize because, go ahead, is that a hand? Or, yeah, go ahead. Either one. A candle, right, okay, good. One candle in the dark is really strong. Is that what you said? Okay, so I think, again, for those of us who grew up in Chutz La'aretz, right, especially because Hanukkah is this holiday that comes at a time, right, when the whole world around us is celebrating a different holiday, right, I think for a lot of us, Hanukkah represents, like, I'm going to light my candle in the darkness, right, I'm identifying with my religion, right, and, like, it's about us, right, saying who we are as opposed to who you are, right? I think that's a big part of it. Okay, so what I want to point out to you is that in Eretz Yisrael, the message is much less about that, and it's really, like, again, if you ask your little Gan kids, what is Hanukkah about? They will talk about, Hanukkah is about strength. It's about fighting off the invaders. It's about autonomy. It's about having our own land. It's about being in our own country, right? Because they are very much plugged into that part of Hanukkah that I think is kind of lost when you're not celebrating Hanukkah in the land in which it happened, okay? And we don't have that sensitivity to that piece. And what I want to show you now is that this piece. I'm not just making it up. This is what the Rambam says. And the Rambam describes Hanukkah. What he says, the reason we're celebrating Hanukkah, a big piece for him. Obviously, we're going to get to the Nes Pach Hashem and what the spiritual message is. But before we get to the spiritual message, a big piece is a celebration of that ability to have self-governance, autonomy, to be our own people in our own country. That is the heart of what Hanukkah is about. So if you look at the Rambam, okay, let's just read the Rambam very quickly. B'bayit sheni kishemalchu yavan gazru gzeirat Yisrael batlu de'atam v'lo hinichu atam la'asok b'torah v'mitzvot. Okay, so we don't have to read every detail, but right, the Yavanim came and they didn't allow religious freedom. Okay, v'tzar lahem liYisrael me'od mipnehem, and it was very bad for the Jews. Okay, now three lines from the top of this sheet. Okay, ad shebichem aleim alokei avoteinu, until Hashem had pity on them, v'hoshiyam miyadam, right, and he saved them, v'hitzilam v'gavru bnei chashmonai hakohanim hagdolim. Okay, v'hamidu melech, look at this, is the bold, min hakohanim v'chazra malchut liYisrael yater al matayim shana ad korban hasheni. Right, the Rambam points out that what did the Maccabim do? They established a king, and they had what he calls Chazra Malchut LiYisrael. Right, kingship was returned to Am Yisrael for more than 200 years. Okay, and then he talks about the Nes Pach Hashemen. Okay, and then he talks about in Halacha Gimel the. That's why, right? Mipnei zeh hitzkinu chachamim, right? That's why chachamim were mitzaken this chag of Hanukkah with all of its mitzvot. Okay? Okay. So that is piece one. Okay? Piece one is this idea of Jewish autonomy. But obviously, Jewish autonomy is not enough. Right? Jewish autonomy is a very nice thing, but it's really only valuable if what? When is Jewish autonomy valuable? What? Yes, if it enables us to fulfill our mission as the Jewish people, right? And what is our mission as the Jewish people, obviously, right? Our mission as the Jewish people are to be those who worship Hashem, and we'll take it one step further in a second, okay? So the next question is, obviously, it's not just about that physical redemption. It's clearly also about some other deeper type of spiritual message. What is the spiritual message of Hanukkah? Okay, so we all know, obviously, what symbolizes the spiritual message of Hanukkah? Obviously, the Nes Pach Hashemen, right? The miracle of the Shemen, that one little tiny oil container that they found in the Mikdash, right, that was only supposed to last for one day and lasted 8 days, and that's the spiritual, what? No question? No? Okay. That is the symbol of the spiritual message of Hanukkah. And the question is, what does the Nes Pach Hashemen symbolize, right, and what's it really about? Okay, so I have a different question for you. Did they really need to use the Nes Pach Hashemen? They came into the Mikdash. They wanted to rededicate the Mikdash. Is it true that they could not have lit the menorah if they hadn't found Shemen Zayit Zach that had never been touched? No, it's not true. Sydney's shaking her head. Why not? Good, right? Tuma, right? Hutra B'tzibur. Right? In a time when the entire Sibor is Tamei, right? Especially in a Shat Hadchak, it would have been mutar to use any Shemen. You didn't need the Shemen that was so holy. Okay? They could have used any Shemen. They didn't have to use that holiest of holy Shmanim, Shemens. Okay? So we have to ask ourselves, what is the symbolism of the Nes Pach Hashemen? Okay, so before we look at that, I want to look at one of the essential halachos of Hanukkah, and I want to see another facet of the spiritual element of Hanukkah, and see how does this facet tie into the Nes Pach Hashemen. Okay, so this also should be very, I hope, familiar to you. Okay, if not, this is very important, and let's take a look at it now. Tanu Rabbanan. Mitzvah Chanukah ner ish uveito. What does that mean? What's the baseline halacha of Chanukah? What do you have to light? one candle per night per household. One, right? Umahadrin ner l'chol echad ve'echad. What's a level of spiritual excellence over one candle per night per person? Each person should light how much? One candle. Umahadrin. Min ha-mahadrin, Beit Shammai omrim yom rishon medlik shmona, umikan ve'elach pachot v'holeich, ubet Hillel omrim yom rishon medlik achat, umikan ve'elach mosif v'holeich. Right here you have this famous machloket, Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai says the first night you light how many? Eight, and then you go down. And Beit Hillel says no, the first night you light one and go up. Right, and the Gemara continues, what's the machloket based on? Right, and it's either according to Beit Shammai, right, every Beit Shammai keneged yamim ha-nichnasim v'tama de Beit Hillel keneged ha-yamim ha-yotzim, right? You're counting how many days you have left or how many days are still coming. Or is it keneged parei ha-chag that when on Sukkot you bring every day, right, and one less, right? And Beit Hillel says, and this is the important part, de ma'alin b'kodesh ve'ein moridim. You always go up in spirituality and you don't go down in spirituality. So now we have to understand what is the centrality of these mitzvot, which we all know, we've all learned them since first grade. How do they symbolize really the essence of Hanukkah? Okay, so if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, what is the Shulchan Aruch paskin? Ma neirot madlik. What is he paskin? B'layla rishon madlik echad mikan ve'elach mosif v'holeich echad b'chol layla ad shebelel ha'acharon yesh shmona. Okay, va'afilo im rabim b'nei habayit. So what do we first of all paskin? Do we paskin the baseline halacha? No, what do we paskin? The level of mahadrin, right? We insist on the level of mahadrin. You have to be adding one every night. Okay? Okay. Hega, and the Ramah adds, v'yoshirim d'chol achad b'nei habayit yedlik v'chein amin haga pashut. And the Ramah adds, the mahadrin min mahadrin. Not just that you should be adding every night, but that everybody should be lighting. Okay? V'yazhiru l'yitein l'chol achad n'eratav m'akol m'yachad, but everybody should be lighting in different places. Why? So you shouldn't get confused about the number of candles. Okay. Now what I want to look at, the next piece here, this English piece, is a piece by Rav Rosenzweig. Okay? It's Rosh Hashiva at YU. He asks this question of what is the spiritual message of Hanukkah, okay, and how is it connected to the Nes Pach HaShemen, and this question of why was it even important to use the Pach HaShemen? Why didn't they just use regular oil? Okay, so his answer is going to tie together everything that we looked at so far. Okay, the Hashmonaim revolt rejected the very notion of institutionalized spiritual mediocrity, even at the expense of national survival. What does that mean? What were the Hashmonaim saying, right, with their revolt, with their mered? What were they saying? It's more important to us to risk our physical lives to ensure what? Our spiritual lives, okay? Let's keep going. The nation could not acquiesce, could not agree to the decrees against the study of Torah and performance of mitzvos, because such an acquiescence agreement would have undermined the very foundation of Jewish existence, even if it might temporarily have secured the physical continuity of the nation. Okay? Meaning, okay, why, by the way, right, is it, why do they risk their lives? I thought, isn't there like a halacha of, what's the halacha? Pikuach nefesh? Sorry. Just went out of my head, right? Isn't that true? That if it's pikuach nefesh, I'm allowed to violate mitzvot of the Torah? Yeah. Exactly, right? If it's a shat hashmad, what's the answer? Pikuach nefesh goes out the window. Even if they tell you, according to the Gemara, to tie your shoelace a different way, you have to be willing to die and not tie your shoelace that way. Why? Why at that point? Okay, look at the bold. Each discrete challenge to halachic life might warrant a response of ya'avor va'al yahareg. However, when applied pervasively to justify a comprehensive and systemic breakdown of halachic life, this policy condemns Klal Yisrael to spiritual oblivion. Hanukkah, then, represents a struggle for a maximalist halachic lifestyle. What is Hanukkah essentially about? What were they really fighting for? Right? They were fighting for the right to keep halacha in its maximal way. Right? Even if, theoretically, they could have survived, they could have, I don't know, done Bris Mila in hiding and taught Torah in the basement and kept Shabbos, right, secretly, and just kind of put their heads down and said, let's wait until this is all over. We'll survive physically and everything will be fine. What are they saying? We don't want to compromise on our spiritual lives. Okay? We are fighting for not just halachic mediocrity. We are arguing for our right to live our lives according to the value of halachic excellence, right? To live our lives according to the maximal keeping of the halacha we possibly can, okay? And that explains why the Pach HaShemen was so important, right? Precisely because attaining the victory in the military struggle once joined was indispensable. This miracle, just the physical battle, does not accurately convey the singular character of Hanukkah, okay? The miracle that resolved the first national spiritual challenge, the ritual impurity of the temple oil, dramatically captured the very spirit of the Hashmonaim struggle. Why? A miracle that obviated the need to rely upon the bidi'evet halachic response of tuma hutra b'tzibur, or even the thinning of the wicks, or the use of halachically inferior oil, forcibly projected halachic idealism and maximalism as the foundation of the result. What's Rav Rosenzweig saying? He's saying, theoretically, they could have done something that would have been mutter b'di'evet. What could they have done that would be mutter b'di'evet? They could have used tamei oil. They could have thinned the wicks. It could have burnt for less time. But why didn't they do that? Because that went against everything they fought for in their battle, right? In their Hanukkah battle. What were they fighting for in their Hanukkah battle? They weren't fighting for b'di'evet, right? They weren't fighting for, okay, let's figure out how to survive. They were fighting for the right to keep Torah and to keep mitzvot in the maximal, in the best, in the ideal possible way that they thought right, okay? And that's what they risked everything for, and that's what they won, right? And so by the Neis Pach HaShemen, what's HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying? Right? I'm now giving you the opportunity to keep the halacha in the most maximal, lechatchila, optimal, best way that you possibly can, because that's really what Hanukkah is about. Okay? Hanukkah is not about living a bidyeved life. Hanukkah is about living a lechatchila halachic lifestyle. Okay? And why is, how does that then tie into the mitzvot of Ner Hanukkah? Again, what's unusual about the mitzvot of Ner Hanukkah? What we have, it's true that we have in a lot of other chagim, this concept of hidur mitzvah, right? Where do we see the concept of hidur mitzvah in other chagim? What? Sukkot, right? You want to get the most beautiful lulav, you want to zekeliva anvehu, or the most beautiful estrog, you want to decorate your sukkah, right? On Pesach, you might have people who want to, I don't know, be very makpid about how much they're going to drink of their wine or what their matzah is going to, right, look like. But on Hanukkah, the idea of doing something to the best possible way is codified as lechatchila, the way you celebrate. Okay, look at the last paragraph here. It is entirely appropriate that unique among mitzvot, the mitzvah of Neirot Chanukah, right? It's not just all of Chanukah. It's a mitzvah of the Ner, which symbolizes the Neis Pach HaShemen, projects three distinct levels. Ner Yishuveto, Mahadrin, and Mahadrin Minah Mahadrin. While the concept of Zeh Keli V'Anvehu establishes a general concept of Hidur Mitzvah, only in Chanukah do we encounter different qualitative performances, right? Only in Chanukah do we say, here are three levels. Okay? Moreover, the Shulchan Aruch and the Torah almost exclusively emphasize the more ambitious and idealistic performance of the mitzvah. So not only do we point out that there are different levels, what do we encourage you to do? What do we say to you? Not only are there three levels, but I'm telling you, you should do the highest one. This Chag, I want you to go for the highest one. Okay? According to Rabbeinu Bachya, the term Chanukah also suggests chinuch, an educational program. May we succeed in internalizing and inculcating maximalism and idealism in halachic standards and performance, thereby fulfilling the aspirations of Chanukah. Okay, so what's Rav Rosenzweig arguing? What is Chanukah about? It's about living our lives according to a maximalist halachic approach. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, so now I want to take it the last step, okay? One step further. How does this also go, going back to the question of establishing your own autonomy in your land, right? And again, if I ask you, what's the struggle in Hanukkah about, right? So it's not just about that Nes Pach HaShemen and, you know, can I use this oil or not use this oil? And it was, and again, it wasn't just about can I keep the mitzvos or not? What was the struggle between? What was the struggle in Hanukkah? I asked you before, right? So everything we said so far, what's Hanukkah about? What were they, who were the good guys and who were the bad guys? What? Us against the Greeks, but what was the challenge? Was it just those Greeks who wanted to kill us and destroy us and
keeping our identity,
right? Remember those middle people that we haven't talked about? Who were those? The Mityavnim, right? There were plenty of Jews who said what? What? Assimilation. Greek culture is wonderful. Greek culture is terrific. Let's assimilate. Let's bring in Greek culture. Okay, so now I'm confused. Because is Hanukkah about not liking Greek culture? Is that the message? We don't want to gain anything from the outside world? Is that the message of Hanukkah?
No.
How do you know that it's not? Well, you don't necessarily know that it's not, but I basically told you that Chazal had no problem with Alexander the Great. Right? It's not that Chazal said any influence from the outside world is bad. That's not the message of Hanukkah. Okay, so if not every message from the outside world is bad, well, where's the line? And how do I draw it? And how do I know? And when does acculturation go too far? And when does it turn from acculturation to assimilation? And like, how do I navigate? Do I want to bring things in from the outside world? Do I want to keep myself separate from the outside world? And what does Hanukkah tell me about this question? Okay, and that's the question that I want to kind of answer, and with that, just sum up and bring everything together. Okay, so the question becomes, how do I think about influences from the outside world? Okay, do I take them in or do I not take them in, and how much do I take them in? Okay, so I think the answer to this question, the key lies in a pasuk, in Bereishit, that actually talks not just about the outside world, but very specifically about Yafet. Who's Yafet? The third son of Noah. Who comes from Yafet? The Greeks, right? Yafet is the father of Yavan. Okay? And what is the bracha given to Yafet? Okay? Yaft Elokim leYafet, v'yishkon b'ohalei Shem. Okay? And then Canaan is an Eved also to Shem and also to Yafet, okay? Meaning, Canaan is the son of Ham, right? The third son, right? He's like bad. But Yafet is not bad, right? What does Hashem say about Yafet? Hashem will give beauty to Yafet, right? Yafet will be beautiful, which makes sense because who is Yafet? He's the father of the Greeks. What did the Greeks bring to the world? Certainly, a very appropriate word to describe them is beauty. So much beauty, right? In art, in architecture, in human form, right? They brought the concept of beauty to the world. That's one of the things one of the strongest things that the Greeks brought to the world. So what is Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Noach, blessing Yafet, right? I bless you with the gift of beauty. Now, what's the relationship between Shem and Yafet? Who is Shem? Shem is us, the Jewish people. How are we supposed to relate to Yafet? Right? Are we supposed to accept him? Are we supposed to reject him? How are we supposed to relate to him? Right? If Yafet now symbolizes that outside world, that secular world, that non-Jewish world, what is the relationship between us and Yafet? So what's the answer? It's very clear. V'yishkon b'ohalei Shem. What do those words mean? How do you understand those words? Okay? So let's think about it. First of all, what does Shem have? Shem has an ohel. Shem has a tent, right? Shem has established for himself a very clear home and a very clear identity of his own, right? Shem is very certain about who he is, what his beliefs are, and what he stands for, right? And he lives in his own tent. Now, once he has that, what's his relationship to Yafet? What does he say to Yafet? You're a visitor in my tent. Perhaps there is something that you can bring into my tent that can beautify my tent, that can adorn my tent, that I can integrate and then can enrich my own experience. Okay? But are they equals? Right? Again, I don't mean are Jews and non-Jews equals. Chas v'shalom. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying in shame's self-perception is that, well, I have my good things and you have your good things and let's just mushmash them all together. No, right? Shame has a very clear sense of his own identity, right? Shame is first and foremost a Jew. Shame is first and foremost an Eved Hashem. Shame is first and foremost a person who's committed to a halachic, hashkafically Jewish and spiritual lifestyle. If Yafet can enhance that, then great. Okay? But shame decides how much of Yafet to bring in, when Yafet is appropriate, right? But he's only doing that when he's very, very solidly secure about who he is and what he stands for. And then, if he's coming from that place, then he can bring in shame, okay? And this is essentially how Rav Kook views, basically, the role of the Jewish people in the world, okay? And this comes back to why it's important that the Jewish people actually do have their own homeland and their own autonomy, which ties us back to the very beginning, okay? Because shame needs to have a tent. They need to have a place to live, okay? So let's now read this Rav Kook, okay? And with this, we'll kind of tie everything together and end, okay? So I'll read the Hebrew and then I'll read the English, okay? So we'll just simultaneous translation. Staka asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu im olamo, masha lo natan kol hakshorno b'makom achad, lo b'ish achad, v'lo b'adam achad, lo b'eretz achad, lo b'dor achad, v'lo b'olam achad. Okay? Ki'im v'fuzah v'imayim kishorno. God did a great service to the world, in that he did not place all the talents in one place, nor in one person, nor in one nation, nor in one country, or in one generation. But rather, the talents are spread apart. Okay, so what is Rav Kook arguing? Every person, right, but here we're now thinking in a more national level, every nation in the world, right, throughout history, has some type of talent, some type of gift to give to the world, something positive to contribute to the world. Okay? So the Greeks give us something, and the Romans give us something, and France gives us something, and, I don't know, Italy gives us something, and the Golden Age of Spain gives us something, right? Every time period and every nation has a gift that it gives to the world. Rav Kook is saying there is plenty of beauty and chachma bagoyim, right, in those outside cultures. Hashem put it there, and it's a gift to the world. Okay? Now, what is the role of the Jewish people in all this? Okay? What does Rav Kook say? I'm just going to read in English to just end more quickly. But rather, the talents are spread apart, and the necessity of wholeness, which is the most divine power, is to pull everything towards unity, which must come to the world. What's the goal? To bring all of those beautiful gifts that Hashem brought to the world, and to do what with them? To unite them together. What do you think Rav Kook means by unite them together? What does that mean to unite them? Right? Rav Kook quotes a pasuk, "Vayah b'yom ahu yashem achad u'shmo achad." Right? So what are we uniting them for? We're supposed to show that what? All these talents come from Hashem. Right? So again, if we're talking about art and beauty and literature and science and all these great gifts, right, and technology that are out there in the world, right? What does it mean to unite them? To say, who created all those gifts? Hashem. How can they all be used? How can they all be used? And to serve Hashem, right? They can all be used in service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whose job is it in the world to demonstrate that to the world? According to Rav Kook, that's the job of the Jewish people. Okay? So if every nation has a talent, okay, and the French are good at cooking, I'm sorry to make such a, you know, to denigrate them, they're good at more than that, but let's just say, okay, and the, I don't know, Egyptians are good at building pyramids or whatever it is, what are the Jews good at? The Jews are good at showing how all of those talents can be used to serve Hashem. Okay, so if every nation is a color of the rainbow, a color of the rainbow, or the color in the prism, what color are the Jews? Or the Jewish people? They're white, right? They don't just gather it all in, but they reflect it all back, right? They demonstrate how everything can be used for Avodat Hashem. And they are the ones who show, all these talents can be united in service of Hashem, and they can all be unified, okay? Let's just read this in Rav Kook. The uniqueness of the treasures of the world are hidden within the Jewish people. Okay? Otsar. Here. Otsar, Skulat Olamim, Bi'Israel, Huganuz. The Jews hold within them the capacity for all the talents. Again, because they can pull it all in and serve it back to God. In order to achieve this unity for the whole world, there must be certain talents that are absent from the Jewish people. And here there is room for the Jewish people to be influenced by the world. What's Rav Kook saying? In order for the Jews to show, for the Jewish people, for our mission to be, to show how all talents can be turned to Avodat Hashem, what does that mean? Some of the talents are outside of us, right? And we bring them in, and then what do we do with them, right? We can demonstrate how those talents can be turned to Avodat Hashem. Then its path is clear for it, for the Jewish people, to influence the world with its unique internal powers. Okay? That's the role of the Jewish people. So again, why then? How do we tie now all the ideas together? Why is Jewish autonomy so important? Right? Because we need to function as a nation among the other nations in order to serve our purpose. What's our purpose? Right? What's our purpose? Is to show the world how everything we do in life and every talent there is in life can be turned to Avodat Hashem. In order to do that, we also need to be a nation. We also need to be autonomous. We also, again, need to have our own ohel. Okay? That's why our autonomy is important. But our autonomy is only important if we fulfill our tafkid, which means that what kind of a sense of self do we need to have? Right? How do we need to view ourselves? We need to be very clear about our mission. What's our mission? Avodat Hashem. Right? And as Rosenzweig calls it, maximalist. Right, he talks about maximalist halachic behavior, but it's not just halachic, right? It's maximalist spiritual behavior. That's what Hanukkah is really about, right? Hanukkah is not about completely rejecting Greek influence. That's not what Hanukkah is about. Hanukkah is about demonstrating how I can be very careful and sensitive about what I take in from the outside world, and I can integrate it into my life as long as what's my central focus always? Avodat Hashem. Right? If I'm very clear about my own identity, if I'm very clear about my role, then and only then can I open myself up to all kinds of things from the outside world. Right? And that, I think, is really the message of Hanukkah. Right? Our message is to strengthen ourselves to the degree to remind ourselves of who we are. Right? What does it mean for me to maximize my spiritual observance? Right? On a very individual level. And that's a question I think you all have to ask yourselves, right? This is a much more practical place to take it, but let's end here because, right, I think it's the best place to end is on a very practical, personal level. Okay, if Hanukkah is about not being b'di'eved, it's about being l'chadchila, right? And I'm not just talking about in halacha, but I'm talking about in spiritual observance. What would it mean for me to be more l'chadchila in my spiritual observance? Right? Who do I want to be l'chadchila in my spiritual observance? Right? What kind of person do I want to be? What does it mean for me to strengthen my l'chadchila spiritual observance? Because that's really what Hanukkah should be about. Okay? So we'll end there. And Hanukkah Sameach to everybody. Yeah.